More and more Americans are changing their TV habits. They're watching their shows when they want to. You would think that this would send the network scrambling to get the most people to watch their shows in the most ways. But bitter battles between the networks and streaming websites could be on their way to prevent progress. Boston-based TV critic and blogger Ryan McGee is here to tell us more about it. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're going to have a little bit of a cheat sheet about all of the players here so that we can understand its impact. But,
sure.
But let me point this out. This is from a piece written by Think Progress that last year, this is 2011, was the weakest year in terms of movie tickets since 1995. Mm-hmm. So revenues dropped tremendously. And that, of course, got everybody's attention, paying attention to that, though we have heard that movies were in trouble. People are going to their TVs, but not to watch over-the-air programming so much. They're streaming. Mm-hmm. They're going to pay TV. This is the scenario now.
This is the scenario. Just from a user experience alone, sitting at home in your living room has become qualitatively better over the last couple of years, just as the movie experience itself has sort of gone down in quality. If you have a large television in your living room and you can stream something in high definition or rent it from one of the many services there, you don't have to worry about the crowds, you don't have to worry about the parking, you don't have to worry about your babysitting service, that suddenly becomes a very valid option for people. And so you get the tentpole movies. They're always going to draw people in.
Give me an example.
Like the Avengers, something you want to see on a big screen, but something, let's say, like the King's Speech. I didn't feel like I had to go to see the King's Speech in a theater to get the full experience of that particular film. Now, film isn't necessarily my expertise, mm-hmm. TV per se, but just the idea, it boils down to both, it's all about the economics of it. TVs are bigger and cheaper, and people are less likely to have disposable income around which they can sort of, take off for a night. So they want to sort of bundle their packages. They think about television. They'll pay that once a month. There are more choices than ever, but maybe as we discussed today, those choices are fragmenting the industry as a whole and creating extremely interesting opportunities, but also problems that maybe we as consumers haven't anticipated and are only now starting to understand from a business perspective.
So one of the things that's happening, just to repeat what you just said, is that people are taking the tentpole movies like The Avengers and saying, I'm never going to the theater anymore. I'm going to use my 52-inch screen TV, mm-hmm. And I'm going to watch it at home for all the reasons that you said. So that's one piece of it. But another piece of it is that people are like, I'm not an Avengers person. You're not showing me anything, Hollywood. They're bad movies. Whereas on TV, on HBO, for example, on Showtime, for example, these original series with really fine actors, these original movies, people are willing to pay for.
Right. And also the stigma about television has radically dropped over the past decade. The idea that you were taking a step down by going from film to television hasn't completely evaporated. If you look at the Emmys, they'll almost always give the awards to the movie star who came down, like Julianne Moore, the second she signed on to do Game Change. As Sarah Palin.
Which was an HBO movie.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. She was going to do that. But there was no stigma attached to that. No one thought that it was a step down for Julianne Moore. If you can get Clive Owen to be Ernest Hemingway opposite Nicole Kidman on HBO, you've got a value product right there. And it's already something that people have already paid for. They already have their HBO subscription. So to them, it feels, and again, this is what we're going to get to maybe, it feels as if it's already been paid for. It's not coming out of pocket. I'm not planking down my Visa card. I'm not planking down my $40.
Each time.
If I go to see The Avengers with my wife in 3D, that's more than the dinner I paid for that night to go out there. So it just makes sense more. And that's not just for movies. That's for television series as well. Claire Danes starring in Homeland right now.
That's a Showtime series.
Yeah, Jeff Daniels on HBO's The Newsroom. I mean, you can get these sort of big marquee stars that you can market to somebody. And they don't have to be on the big screen for you to see them.
And let's point out that Game Change, which you referred to with Julianne Moore, just won a whole slew of awards. And that was, you had to be an HBO subscriber to get that, period. It wasn't coming to my local movie theater.
No, it wasn't. They're bypassing these things. And the market for those sort of mid-range adult films, that's almost exclusively the province of premium cable at this point. The idea that you can make a Michael Clayton now mm-hmm. and get that greenlit in a studio just isn't there. They want the super indie film that maybe will catch on by word of mouth, or they want the tentpole movie where they can sell it in international markets, and they can almost guarantee within a relative frame of reference that they can make their money back. But those like $30 to $70 million adult dramas or thrillers, you just can't sell that in Hollywood to a major studio. You can sell that to HBO. You can sell that to Stars. You can sell that to Showtime. And you can still get a quality both in front of and behind the cameras that will yield you a satisfying product.
And I think I want to highlight what you've said about that mid-range adult audience,
yes,
which is being overlooked at the theater, which our film critic Garen Daly says all the time, because what's the people who are running the choices for Hollywood in the big tentpole movies, as you say, are the 13-year-old boys who will go again and again and again, and also the kind of film that'll allow them to sell it overseas. So that mid-range adult wanting to spend money to be entertained, not finding anything at the Cineplex, turning increasingly at home. So now we've got these choices, and oh my God, it's all confused.
Yes.
It's Netflix, it's HBO, it's all a tangle. Please break it down.
It is a very exciting time, and I bet if we listen back on this conversation in 5 years, I will laugh at my naivete and what I'm about to say, but I'll try to give the best way that I can right now. There have been a lot of rumblings about, you know, you were just discussing earlier about the tactile quality of a novel.
Yes.
And how people really love that, and you really can't replicate that. There's not really that correlation for television. There's the screen, and whatever you're viewing it on ideally becomes invisible. So I'm watching it on my, you know, if I had a 70-inch screen, I'd watch it on that. I can watch it on my tablet. I can watch it on my phone. It's all the same thing that we call television, although television in and of itself is this weird word that's probably going to go away. I don't know what we're going to replace it with. Long-form narrative. It sounds pretentious to say it that way, but that's where we're going. The issues are right now around something like Netflix. Netflix has, up until this point, seemed as something fundamentally different than a television, either a cable package or a television station. It's basically been a portal. It's all content that you've seen before. It's collated together. You can package it. You can rent it for a monthly basis.
So that would be, I could go get the Avengers, as you say, or anything else already been out there.
At a certain point, yes.
Yeah.
You can get all that. It's helpful for catching up on old series.
Mm-hmm.
I caught up on a show called The Vampire Diaries, which is a CW show this summer. I could blow through that if I wanted to. I can blow through Breaking Bad. If you're a parent and you don't have anything on television for your kids, there's thousands of hours of television.
So that's Netflix.
That's Netflix.
Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
I'm speaking with Ryan McGee. He is a TV critic and blogger. And we're talking about the changes in TV viewing habits, which are potentially wreaking havoc at the Hollywood box office and changing the way people access their entertainment on what we're calling TV right now.
Yep.
Continue, Ryan.
The popularity of Netflix has decoupled the audience experience from sitting down at a certain time and watching television. That has already been sort of hammered away at by the rise of DVR. DVR, oddly enough, it just seems like an odd number to me, hasn't reached 50% penetration in the United States yet.
That's digital video recording.
Right. So if you want, so we were joking, a lot of us last week, around calling Sunday the DVR apocalypse, because there was just so much good programming. There was The Good Wife, there was Homeland, there was Dexter, Once Upon a Time, Revenge, never mind Sunday Night Football. How are you going to watch all these things there? So I've got two TVs doing two different things and just, you know, working overtime there.
And you left off the Real Housewives franchise, I'm just saying. Continue.
I apologize profusely
okay.
for that.
Okay.
So choice becomes, watching everything when it airs is no longer really a possibility if you're a hardcore fan. So you have to figure out ways to do it. And no one really has the same viewing experiences anymore. I just talked about one show that I've caught up on. Everyone has that show that they're just ashamed that they're not watching. We try our best, we can't do that. So everyone's got these different viewing experiences. And once you sort of get out of the habit of watching a show every particular week, you can get into the habit of like, oh, I'll catch it when it's all the way done. Or you've got the person who says, I don't like watching shows if they're going to be canceled. So I'm going to just wait to see if it gets renewed, which is a self-defeating prophecy if you think about it, because if no one watches the shows, of course it's going to get canceled. That's where Netflix can sometimes come in. The problem is that the primacy of Netflix starts to overpower the primacy of cable. There's a serious problem because it's going to be this negative feedback loop whereby people are decoupling from cable. That's the big worry right now. People pulling the plug. They don't want to do that anymore. They say, you know what? This cable bill is too much. I'm going to get Netflix. I'm going to get Hulu Plus, which is $50 a year and has its own series of programming. That's a online portal owned by several networks that also has original content. And they're just going to make do with that as they can. That's everyone's nightmare. We're not there yet. The possibilities to do that, technologically speaking, are there, but the penetration rate isn't enough. Where it gets really interesting is where you get something like HBO Go. Mm. HBO Go is the digital platform for HBO. It has all of their series going back all the way. You want to watch the entire run of The Wire on your tablet, you can do that. You can watch it on your computer, all of their original movies, and whatever library they currently have a hold of, you can watch that.
So that would be Sex and the City to Game Change.
Absolutely. You can watch all of those things in one sitting on your iPad or your tablet, whatever you want to watch. What people want is HBO Go as a standalone product. That's the call for that. Now, the reason for that is if you get a cable bill, if you get a cable package that has HBO, to get to that level, to get to that tier, you've got to buy a couple hundred stations in there. You've got to go up to, say, you know, tier one is your basic stations. Tier two might get you some basic cable ones like your TNTs, your TBSs, your USA Networks. Then you get up to HBO and Showtime. People say, I don't want to pay the $100 to get to HBO. I want to pay $15 or $20 and just get HBO. And the analogy I would use, and I'm stealing this, so I would love to take credit for this, but I can't, is that imagine if Disney World changed its ticket pricing. So it's not $80 general admission. You could pay $20 to ride Splash Mountain.
Wow.
Disney would go bankrupt within a year. The model just doesn't support that, because not only that does it not work for the cable model, it ultimately wouldn't work for HBO. The cable model wouldn't work because what are they always selling? They're always selling HBO. You want, come over here. We'll give you HBO for 6 months. We'll give you Showtime for 6 months. That's the carrot they're dangling in front of you. And how many people actually get rid of that once they're used to it? And that's the thing. Once you get used to a certain habit, it becomes very, very hard to break it. So Netflix and HBO, Netflix wanted to work with HBO. HBO's like, no, we're good. We got this. We're fine with that. The people in the middle are the ones that are getting really hemmed in and are starting to pull the curtain back, revealing the quote-unquote wizard behind the thing there. And the main
the consumers in the middle.
Oh, these are actually also major network executives.
Okay.
And the one who really sort of sent off the flare about a lot of this is John Landgraf.
Okay.
Who is an executive at FX. And he took his executive summary of something called the Television Critics Association panel. It's a biannual panel held for 2 weeks a year in a hotel in Los Angeles. All the nation's TV critics and journalists gather in one room. All the networks parade their shows out. You can ask questions. You can mingle. You can get a lot of access. So rather than talk about the success of his network, he did this a little bit. He just launched into a broadside against Netflix and the way that they report their ratings. So Netflix decides this year they want to get into original content. They no longer want to be a portal. They want to provide their own content.
They want to become a little HBO.
Potentially. No one knew quite what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So the first show they did was a show called Lilyhammer, which starred Steven Van Zandt, who music fans will know as a member of the E Street Band with Bruce Springsteen. It was an 8-episode series. They just released 8 episodes, like, not even a weekly basis. Here's all 8.
Wow.
Here you go. Since then, they've announced shows with David Fincher and Kevin Spacey. It's called House of Cards. They've also resurrected the dearly missed, at least critically speaking, Arrested Development. So now Netflix's outside status no longer seems quite outside. And they can report things like, you know what? 20 million people watched Lilyhammer. And Landgraf came out and said, we don't know how much of that show people watched. Did they watch one episode for 30 seconds? Did they watch all 8 episodes? They're not doing that. And they basically challenged everyone in the room to start challenging those ratings. No one had, because no one, it felt like apples and oranges.
Right.
But FX is in this way. FX is one of the people that would be really hurt if HBO jumped ship. If HBO got decoupled from cable, if HBO went on its own way. Because all of that money that gets trickled down. So, you know, I'm going to make up a number, $100 for my cable bill. Say $7 goes to HBO. Maybe $1.50 goes to FX. Maybe $2 goes to USA. Whatever, however it breaks down. They all get a little bit of the piece of the pie here. What FX has done is, rather than their sister networks like TBS, USA, TNT, who have bought up reruns to kind of shore up their lineup, FX went and bought a lot of movies. So they have first cable run on all the movies we've been talking about.
This is yeah, sort of, because I think I've seen it on FX. Yeah.
If you turn on to FX at any point in the last 2 weeks, you've seen Avatar. You can't get away from Avatar. They run that thing into the ground, and they bought, I think, half of the top grossing 2011 movies. They have first exclusive rights.
Okay, so they got the movies.
Yep.
FX has the movies. Netflix is doing original programming, saying screw the rest of you. HBO is not separating out HBO Go. And where does that leave the consumer?
Leaves the consumer very confused. Right now, right now, there's not much in the way of radical change that's going to happen. The person who's decoupling is the exception to the rule. What these networks are trying to figure out is what is the rule going to be.
So what do we do then, since nobody's done it yet, while they're figuring out what the rule is?
I'm not sure there's anything to do. I am a fan of, as I was saying before, if you think a show is worth watching, watch it as close as you can to the actual air date. They're starting to now, the overnight ratings have been sort of the big thing, and that's a lot of newspapers and websites will chase those night after ratings. But if you look at something called L+3, which is live plus three,
right?
Live plus seven, increasingly those numbers are being reported.
And those ratings matter to keeping your shows on.
They can. The numbers that we see are a fraction of what's actually being reported. If I wanted to know how many people watched every single minute of Sons of Anarchy, we could do it. We just don't have the access to the crosstabs right now to see what's going on. But that's where it's going to be. The networks are going to start following the people. Wherever the people decide, wherever offers the best product, that's what's going to win.
And that could mean that for me, as a consumer, I could just buy a little piece of HBO, a little piece here and there, and maybe I never watch network TV.
It's very possible.
That's ugly for networks.
It could be. And
for Hollywood, because I'm not going to the Cineplex either.
And you might lose, what I love also about watching TV as live as possible, is you're losing the communal experience, even if it's a virtual one, that we can sit around and talk about these episodes, because they have an expiration date.
Yes.
Less so on the drama ones. You can go back and watch an episode of Breaking Bad, but something like Survivor. No one's talking about season three of Survivor right now.
All right. Well, I'm one of the problems because I watch all of the whole season of Downton Abbey. I like it all at once. So
there you go.
There you go. I've been talking TV with Ryan McGee. He's a Boston-based TV critic and blogger. You can find a link to his blog, BoobTube Dude, on our website. Thank you so much for breaking down the whole Netflix network Hollywood movie thing, Ryan.
All right. Glad to be here.
And thank you for joining us for another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in tomorrow, where we continue our 30 issues in 30 days election coverage with a focus on poverty. We also gear up for the presidential debate with a look at crutch words, the words that politicians and everyday people cling to. I'm Callie Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH. No, you...